accommodate good Senator Ferrioli and start with Senate Bill 194. I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 194. Before we go to Senator Ferrioli, let's get a quick presentation from Day.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Let's see. Where am I? So, Senate Bill 194 authorizes a county to adopt an education funding protection ordinance for up to 10 years under certain conditions. And there are a lot of certain words in this bill description because the bill has a lot of qualifiers. So we could start with Senator Ferrioli, and then I can fill you up with details a little bit later.
All right. Sounds fair to me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Ted Ferrioli, District 30. All are part of several thousand, 34,000 square miles, mostly in Frontier, Oregon. Frontier, Oregon is defined by places that have population of less than 6 persons per square mile and population density. Colleagues, many of the communities in my district are losing population and find it increasingly difficult just to provide basic services, schools, hospitals, public safety, and so forth. Particularly hard-pressed are local school districts who are the beneficiaries of not only the school funding formula, as you're so well aware, but also special adjustments that have to be made just to make sure those schools don't close. Because if you just go on a population base, and we're losing population, you don't have enough money to keep the lights on. So we do everything we can, literally, locally and statewide, to make sure that the center of the community, which are the school systems, don't just close or have to consolidate, which leaves kids on school buses in the dark going both different directions. It's a challenge. It's part of the challenge people take on when they choose to live in rural Oregon. But there are other factors that are beyond local control that impinge on their ability to stay there, part of which is changing natural resource policy, which makes it very difficult to sustain a local community on forestry, mining, and some of the other things. And more increasingly, because of West Coast shipping issues and some other issues beyond our control, even agriculture is getting difficult. Add the drought conditions, and at least temporarily, we've got a couple of years of very tough sledding. The bill that you have before you is an attempt to recognize some of those issues, but also to recognize Oregon's commitment to land use planning and protection of farmland and forest land. So in previous legislative sessions, we've had a no net loss of private lands bill, and that was viewed, I think, by many people as being a net too widely cast. So we attempted to very much narrow the scope of this bill, and what it specifically says is that in certain areas where we're losing population and we have less than 100,000 people, and we also have a great number of the acres controlled or owned by public agencies, federal government, Bureau of Land Management, and others that do not pay taxes to the school district. And also, you know, there's a shaky future for payments in lieu of taxes. We've looked at those communities and said the county can, in fact, start to weigh in on transfers from private to public land. It would allow counties to declare themselves to be almost an emergency situation. They would be able to create a district that had one of its principles the protection of the school base tax base. And so for a period of 10 years, they could actually prevent the erosion, the further erosion of their tax base. So that's what's at the base of this bill. There are some technicalities. I'm certain that your staff will point out all the limitations. But basically, it prevents private property from being removed from the tax rolls with the corresponding loss to school districts and other special taxing districts. And that's the bill in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Senator Ferrioli?
Okay, thank you, sir. Thanks for keeping this discussion alive.
Thank you very much. I also just want to wish everyone a wonderfully happy St. Patrick's Day, and I'm leaving you to talk into stunned silence as usual. So appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Judge Patrick Perry is here from Wheeler County, so maybe he could come up.
Judge Chris Perry.
Oh, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Aha.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm coming up with the judge just to introduce him. First of all, AOC supports this bill, and we particularly appreciate the local option decisions. There's several points in this bill that are at the option of the county. The county, if it has this authority, may exercise it or not. And if it does decide to pass this ordinance, there is some model provisions in the bill for that ordinance, but they're not mandatory. So again, that's the county would be able to shape it to its own particular circumstances. Chris, Judge Perry, is in a particular situation where he would appreciate this authority, and he can explain why anecdotally the situation that Wheeler County is in right now. So I'd have the judge introduce himself and then talk to you.
Chair Hath, Senators, for the record, I'm Patrick C. Perry, Wheeler County Judge. And from one of Senator Ferrioli's most frontier counties, I have a county of 1,430 citizens. Less than one person per square mile, so we definitely fall into the bracket here for qualifying. But with that, we only have 3,000 tax accounts in our county. We gather taxes from only 3,000 accounts, and less than a $2 million budget with our pass-through money from the state total. So it's challenging to provide services on to such a broad 1,700 and some square miles of county, and we do that with a sheriff and two deputies, and we have a real bare courthouse staff, and all of this is in a fragile ecosystem because of our ability to tax is we're the second highest tax rate in Oregon, $8.53 a thousand, and our voters voted that in the 90s because they wanted to retain their county government. But also in the 80s, we had a land exchange happen in my county that took 40,000 acres of deeded land and made it BLM lands. And when that happened, as you can guess, we had to cut services. We cut back a deputy clerk in the courthouse. We cut back a sheriff, a deputy of the sheriff's office. So we're probably at the far extreme side of how just a minor land exchanges from private going to federal can affect us. But we've recently had other lands acquired in our county by tribes organizations that may be tax exempt, and I think that goes back to the old bill, the no net loss, but just the ability for us to lose more land to land exchanges with the federal government by a third party conservation group buying the property, and then like they did with land in Gillum County recently, and making that land, turning it back to the BLM for BLM management, then it takes it off the tax rolls as well. It's very difficult to plan on sustainable services to our citizenry and our visitors to our county, with the ability for this federal government to take large tracts of our land without making adjustments to the tax base. So, with that, I'll let you ask me questions if I can assist you with the answers to them.
Thank you for coming over to the Capitol and for your testimony. It's sometimes hard for us to really remember over on this side of the hill the population and the land. Because when you said you had 1,400 residents, I was thinking the high school down the street from me has more than that in their high school, and I have five of those high schools in my Senate district. And so I'm sure you have ranches in your district that are larger than my Senate district. So it takes a while for us to get our hands around some of these issues, and this one is in particular. Senator Boquist, do you have questions?
Yeah, I just have a quick question. I mean, because predominantly it's county funding and education issues like that. And where's the, I'm trying to picture, been through there about 3 or 4 years ago. Where's the main schools are in the county seat, and then everybody, three schools are in the county seat, and then the question is, what's the typical size of the county? I mean, the commute, just getting the kids to the school is expensive by itself.
We have three different communities in my county. We have Spray, Mitchell, and Fossil, and each one of them has its school district, which is made up of kindergarten through high school. It's all in the same building. And recently our schools have had to do creative, just to keep their doors open, they've had to be creative and be dormitory schools where we board students. And that helps in the context of some of our more outlying areas, the ability to board the students at the school. But it was mainly done to have enough enrollment to warrant having a school. In the south end of the county, in the Mitchell area, there's one bus route is 70 miles a day. They travel, and that's rough on the little guys. So if we had to do another consolidation of schools and have one centrally located school in the county, that could increase that up to a 140-mile round trip if our schools had to condense and consolidate more.
Lots of times when we have suggestions and recommendations to consolidate school districts in an effort to make them more efficient, we often tell them that they should drive over to Fossil or Wheeler County and bring that idea to the townsfolk there for that very reason.
Mr. Chair, may I a couple more comments, if it have your permission. Of course, this is world-famous Fossil country. So there is some tourist traffic when the weather's right, but we have a famous well-known picture within our offices floating around that Judge Perry is not only the county judge, but he's in effect an unpaid employee of the road department, because we've got him driving a cat along with his limited, really extremely limited road crew. So he does it all. And in the sign-up sheet, just to illustrate the distance he traveled, there's, of course, the box, 100, have you come from 100 miles? Put in X, 2, so times 2, 100 miles times 2. So we're glad to see him here, and I'm glad he had an opportunity. And thank you very much for hearing this bill.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Jim Green.
Good Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association here testifying in support of Senate Bill 194. I think you've heard from Senator Farioli and the judge the issues that are out there in rural eastern Oregon. And I just want to make sure you understand what this bill does. It doesn't require counties to do this. It says counties have the option of doing it. And I think in an opportunity with counties working with their school districts in the area, you just heard what goes on out there for those small rural school districts when the state, the federal government, tribal governments, a variety of folks come in, and all of a sudden vast chunks of land are taken off the property tax rolls. It can be decimating to a school district budget. I'll give you one example, and I'm not making a judgment on the value of the idea, but in Wasco County, remember, we just opened up a brand new state park called Cottonwood Canyon State Park. It took 8,000 acres off the property tax rolls in Wasco County. Now, the park's beautiful. It's right there along the John Day River. It shows the natural beauty of that part of the world. But I think we need to have discussions about, especially in counties of populations of less than 100,000, where you've got more than 50% of the land owned by governmental entities, to have a discussion about what do we do to help those local governments out. And I think Senate Bill 194 gives counties, school districts, a tool to take a look at opportunities in order to help out school districts with their property tax funding situations. It's just an idea that I think Senator Farioli has worked with those counties. Again, not a mandate on those counties, but an opportunity for governments to work together and try to come up with a solution that may help out some of our struggling smaller school districts in the rural parts of our state. Happy to answer any questions.
I just have a continued observation from 10 years in the legislature. I'm sure the state park in Wasco County is beautiful, but it's like, okay, wait a minute. We're continuing to open new state parks, and we can't even pay for the maintenance of the existing state parks.
And again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Boquist, that's not a judgment on the state parks and the ability to set aside those lands on the Oregon School Boards Association's part. But I think when you're doing things like that, you need to think about the repercussions of fully what happens when you take 8,000 acres off the property tax rolls.
Well, I am making a judgment for the Oregon Chair. We can't afford what we have.
That is what it comes down to. It's balancing those judgments. People in the state value their parks and protected lands, and they value education. Really, that's the crux of the conundrum here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Ann Nash.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Mary Ann Nash. I am the Public Policy Counsel for the Oregon Farm Bureau, and here today in support of the bill. As our previous two speakers have iterated, and I would like to reiterate, the loss of county tax base from conversion of private agricultural lands to publicly held lands has been a significant issue for our members and a significant issue that our members are facing in their rural communities. These acquisitions do cost the county tax base, and it does make it harder for these communities to stay afloat and provide the degree of public services that they need to. So this bill is really important in order to ensure that counties have the options and making sure that their schools are still funded as they're continuing to lose this tax base. And for our members who are in rural communities, it's important to make sure that they still have the degree of services that they need to ensure that rural communities stay viable and that those that are left farming and ranching the land can continue to farm and ranch the land. So thank you so much, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's call up Amanda Rich and Kelly Beamer from the Nature Conservancy and the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I'm the Director of State Government Relations for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon, and appreciate the opportunity to voice a few concerns about Senate Bill 194 today. Though we are as all of us are deeply concerned about the financial circumstances facing rural communities. And in fact, much of what we do in our work is based on trying to find solutions that balance the needs of nature and people and actually increase the vitality of rural economies with the through the sustainable use of natural resources. We are concerned that this bill, though, as Mr. Green rightly pointed out, is voluntary, and counties may or may not choose to implement it. We're worried, actually, that it could take tools out of the toolbox for both localities and private landowners and others that are being used right now to actually try to bolster and protect rural economies. And the example I'll use is the use of working lands easements. And this bill or these ordinances, if adopted, could disincentivize the use of those easements. And those are tools that we use and other land trusts use to try to help working landowners stay on their land and keep the land in production and continue to provide the economic benefit that keeping those land in production provides. And so that is but one example of a way that we think that this bill might actually, frankly, do the opposite of what it is hoping to do. And in addition, I think one of the provisions that an ordinance could require a one-to-one swap for public land, I think tying the hands of localities in terms of their ability to acquire public land could also hamper activities like trying to acquire land for mitigation purposes in response to trying to fend off ESA listings. So there, it's a complicated, difficult area, and there, I don't know that there are any good answers, though we remain here at the table hoping to be involved in that discussion and find the right balance, as you spoke to, Mr. Chair. And with that, I would take any questions.
Okay. Let's hear from Kelly first, and then we'll go to questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Beamer. I'm the executive director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts, and we're a statewide association that represents 19 nonprofit land trusts that work throughout the state with private landowners to protect water quality, habitat, working farms, forests, and clean air. And I submitted written testimony this morning in partnership with two other state associations that we work very closely with, the Network of Oregon Watershed Councils and the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. And all three of the state associations represent members that work with private willing landowners across Oregon. And all three organizations have some concerns with this legislation, this bill. Our members really have a unique opportunity to work with tools in the toolbox that provide willing landowners with incentives to do conservation activities on their land. We're concerned that this bill mistakenly assumes that conservation is undermining education. In fact, we see, you know, that a lot of the, as Amanda said, a lot of the tools that we offer landowners allow them to stay on their land to continue farming, ranching, and forestry practices, and again, avoid regulatory enforcement. So we're worried that this has an unintentional consequence of limiting landowner rights and the ability of our members to work with willing landowners across the state. And finally, you know, we work with broad-based partnerships and support conservation, and also really want to engage in a conversation about solving some of these underlying problems that we've heard about earlier today, and would happily join in that conversation.
Questions for this panel? Senator Bertscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Amanda, a lot of the projects your group has worked on has been good. They're very good. But I have to be reminded, like in my district, where over 75% of the land mass is public lands and don't contribute to the county. At one time when we were utilizing some of the natural resources off those lands, Josephine County had the best sheriff's department in the state. We built three brand new high schools, middle schools. We had the best roads in the state. Now, because those lands are locked up and they're not contributing to the community in any ways, July we're going to probably shut down our sheriff's department. Poverty is through the roof. Unemployment is through the roof. And the county is literally falling apart. So as we go forward with conservation projects, mitigation for the community needs to be built into those projects. If it's not, we're going to fail. And so that's probably why I'll support this bill, because this is a mitigation point. Is it the perfect bill? Maybe not. But, you know, I have to go back to my district. I have to look at those families and those kids, you know, that if they didn't have wood heat, they wouldn't have heat at all. So, you know, I think going forward from now on, we've got to figure out to mitigate some of these things. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a
Senator Brokwis.
Quick comment, and actually, I guess a thank you. And I've been in the building, as I said earlier, 10 years. And when I first came in the door, being in the same room with the Nature Conservancy was the kiss of death politically. But in the last decade, I mean, both sides have kind of moved together. The Nature Conservancy has, as Amanda pointed out, is trying to work on, is more helpful in working together, and has taken the approach of how do we work together to come towards some sort of solutions. And in some of the places where I have property and farming property, you know, I appreciate that while we still have lots of different agreements. And looking at the two written testimony, I mean, I would just encourage Ms. Beamer that, I mean, I look at the two written testimonies here and I see the Nature Conservancy trying to figure out, being more and more willing to figure out joint solutions, as the good Senator Bertschinger pointed out, and I would encourage both sides to figure that out, because at some point, very soon, maybe even months, access to these lands that everybody wants to conserve is going to end, because there won't be any public services left there. I mean, these counties are absolutely melting down. I'm just like Senator Bertschinger. I mean, 10 years ago, we had all kinds of great things 1 mile across that river in Polk County, and now we're about ready to have zero sheriffs. We have two deputies 10 hours a day now, and the rest is the Wild West 1 mile across that river, and the state police simply can't backfill it. So I would encourage both of your groups, the Nature Conservancy, to continue to work together, which has been actually a success in some areas. But if we don't find a joint solution, blocking the land off isn't going to work, because there won't be any access to the land for anybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the second or third year we've had this bill. Last session we had it in the Education Committee. So the issue doesn't seem to be going away, so maybe there's a some out there.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Edwards,
I want to weigh in, because we had in the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, we didn't have this bill, but we had a bill allowing these similar counties, frontier counties, counties with no population growth, to opt out of the state land use system, essentially. And I gave that bill a hearing earlier this session, a few weeks ago, for precisely these same reasons. Mm-hmm. And these issues come up session after session, second, third session. You said that this bill's been up. And I get the feeling that the opponents of the bill, and I'm not speaking to these two individuals here today, but just generally the opponents of these type of concepts know that they just have to get through the legislative session. You know, these concepts come in. Sometimes they're ready to go. Sometimes they're half-baked. And if you can just get through that first public hearing, then it'll just go away, and something, you know, this big isn't going to happen during a short legislative session necessarily. So they've got two more years, and then the concept comes up again, and then, okay, well, we can just get through those first couple of hearings, and then we got two more years, and just keep pushing it off, keep pushing it off. We have to do something for Frontier Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to have incentives in this nation to settle frontier frontier lands, and now we seem to have public policies that are trying to clear the frontier out. And in the meantime, we have communities that have developed, and we actually do need a working frontier Oregon. So it's a difficult issue. You know, some things, like, you know, some state parks and lands like that do attract visitors that spend money, and that helps. But from a local government standpoint, they aren't getting those income taxes.
Right.
So it's something that we need to take seriously. And I haven't been through the details of this bill yet. This is the first public hearing, but I do hope that we can be very serious about addressing these issues this legislative session and in coming legislative sessions, because the problem isn't getting any better.
Chair Haas, if I may respond briefly, I frankly share some of Senator Edwards' frustration and concerns about the desire to really set a table to have concerted, thoughtful, directed conversations about these issues, and to lay the needs of multiple stakeholders on the table, find where they overlap, and find solutions to going forward to achieving that balance that you spoke of earlier, Chair. And we actually are working on some conceptual amendments around perhaps putting together a task force around working lands, it might be too big to try to take on this as well, but we'd certainly be happy to look into trying to fold this issue in as well. So I share that concern, and would really like to see that conversation go forward.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you both for testifying. Thank you to everybody who weighed in on this, especially our county judge from Wheeler County for coming over. And I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 194. And we will move to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 903. This is your issue today.
Yes. Chair House, members of the committee. So Senate Bill 903 repeals the sunset of the law authorizing school districts to impose construction excise tax. This taxing authority is set to be repealed on January 2nd, 2018. Let me give you a little background information on this, if I can find. Okay, so here. So in the step measure summary, at the bottom, there's a little background information. A school district may impose a tax on a new construction in the district. And this is the taxing authority that the 2007 legislature granted to school districts and school districts only. The tax rate cannot exceed $1 per square foot for residential use and 50 cents for non-residential use. The maximum rates are indexed beginning in 2009. The tax on non-residential use is also restricted to $25,000 per structure or building permit, whichever is less. The legislation exempted certain properties from this tax. I have a little statistic for you. In 2012-13, 56 school districts used this option, raising a total revenue of $15.5 million. And school districts are to use these revenues, net revenues from this tax, only for capital improvements. There's a chart that I prepared compiling the data that I got from ODE. So this inception of 2000, since the inception of this taxing authority in 2007, we had statewide total of this tax increasing from 1.77 million to the most recent data that I have is 15.5 million in 2012-13. Again, not all school districts use, but 56 school districts that I collected with the help of ODE are using this option. This again, this this taxing authority is set to be repealed in 2018. Now this bill actually repeals that sunset and extending this construction excise tax. So checked with Legislative Council, and this is just repealing the sunset, keeping the law intact, not creating new taxes, doesn't require three-fifths majority.
Okay, let's bring up our panel of education community representatives, Morgan Allen, Chuck Bennett, and Laurie Wimmer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burchard.
He says it does not.
Does
require
not.
Okay.
So you're okay.
Yeah.
This is Scott, you want to?
Hand in hand.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
I like it.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Scott Berry on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association. Almost 8 years ago, under the leadership of then-Senator Ryan Deckert, and hopefully that doesn't hurt the prospects for this bill, the construction industry and the education community got together and passed the bill allowing for school districts the exclusive authority to pass a construction excise tax. At the time, new residential and commercial construction in growing areas added to the crowding of school districts, and this bill basically allowed for another tool for funding of capital projects for schools. And the bill allows the school board to pass the tax. It's then collected by the cities. The cities keep a small administrative fee for the collection of the tax. And since then, I think the program's worked fairly well. Again, a compromise between the construction industry and the school community. Obviously, we're interested in maintaining that that balance and that agreement. And so the bill simply removes that the sunset and allows the program to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. I appreciate Mr. Berry's explanation. Just add a couple things. As you mentioned, it was a bipartisan compromise. For those of the four of you that were here in the legislature in 2007, you all voted for it. So just a reminder, the record stands. But one of the things that we've seen, especially as the economy started to recover, you can see some of those numbers going up in some of the school districts. It started, the program really started, you know, in the recession era when there was not a lot of construction. We have serious facility needs in school districts across Oregon, particularly in our school districts that have had consistent problems passing bonds to build new buildings or do reconstruction. There are other bills in the process. The Senate President has talked about the massive need for seismic in our school buildings. We know that in districts across Oregon, we have buildings that are unsafe and unfit for our kids, and we're trying to get the state to make some investments there. This, as Mr. Berry said, is another tool in the toolbox for school districts. That's not money that can be used for maintenance or operations. We're talking about planning and building, constructing and remodeling school facilities. So we think it's a good time to remove that sunset. The program has been working well. It's picking up momentum. As your staff, your committee staff mentioned, 56 school districts have implemented it at some level or another, and it's starting to make a difference in some areas. So we'd appreciate your support in repealing the sunset.
Ms. Chair, Chuck Bennett with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Really, I don't have anything to add except our strong support for continuing this program indefinitely.
Mr. Chair and committee members, representing Oregon Education Association, Lori Wimmer, and we too are a member of the work group that brought this original bill 8 years ago, and are delighted that now the recession is over, it actually can start getting its legs underneath it. We think that this is an example of the kind of policy that is a success story of the deliberative process of the Legislative Assembly, and different from other kinds of venues for policy, because we did have the opportunity to start from a place where we were advocates for the SDCs for schools movement for many, many years that was opposed by the home builders, and this was a compromise that could deliver the same result, which is targeted and specific to the areas where growth doesn't otherwise pay for itself. And when there is not building going on, there is also less pressure for building new schools. So it has some synchronicity to it. We think it's a great piece of public policy, and we'd love to see it continue ad infinitum. Thank you.
Thank you. I would agree with that sentiment, too, that this was a good example of coming together two warring sides on the SDC issue that has been on forever. Question, Scott, what is this to an average home? What are we talking about? The average tax on a building or residential home, 3,000 square foot home?
Chair Haas, I think if we looked at an average residential home of it's $1 a square foot, so if we looked at an average residential home of 1,800 square feet, let's say, it would be $1,800. However, there is the index, so where that is specifically right now after the indexing, I couldn't say, but it's somewhere around that $2,000 a house right now.
Just for thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarity, I mean, Scott, you made mention cities. It's actually school district wide, right? Not just cities, it's the entire school district, so it'd be counties, wherever the taxing district is in the collector. It's not city specific.
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, that's correct, but it is collected by the cities because they're the receivers of the building permit, and so they collect it, keep an administrative fee for the collection, and then pass it on to the school districts, and that's probably about as much as I know about that process.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Staff, more clarity here, because, I mean, I have lots of school districts that have no cities. So it's the school district specific, and if it's the county issuing the building permit, it's then in the county?
It is only for school district. Yes. And there's a grandfathered in clause allowing those who had that tax before 2007. But then since then, it is only for school districts and school districts only.
Correct, but for example, I mean, I'll use Perrydale. Perrydale is a school district in my district, that has no city. There is no city at all. And in that particular case, if Perrydale was, you know, correct me if I'm not wrong, because I did vote for this, obviously, is that in that case, the building permit would be issued by the county. If the school district would levy the deal, the county would collect the fees and so on and so forth like that. I'm just trying to make sure the record is built that this is for everybody, not just kids.
Yeah, Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, that is correct. We would then, in that case, apply for our building permit at the county, and that's where the fee would be paid, and then it would be passed from the county to the school district.
Just for a little clarification, this $1.50 is maximum rate, and of course, you know, less can be imposed, and it's only permissive, so the school districts doesn't actually have to impose construction tax.
And most school districts are so flush that they don't need to.
Especially Weaver,
Mr. Chair. Because I'm new to this committee and learning about all these issues and the interactions, are there any? Does this count? Does this assessment by school districts count toward the property tax limitations that are in our Constitution? And these are separate? Okay.
Yes. That's okay. A excise tax. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
It's outside of compression.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I think that answers all our questions. Thank you. Anyone else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 903? I don't see anyone. So we're going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 903 and bring it back for a work session as soon as we can. and go from there. With no other business before us, we will adjourn. With no other business before us, we will adjourn.